This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The North Carolina legislature has been busy this week considering everything from the ridiculous to the sublime. Laura Leslie is the Capitol reporter for North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. She joins us now, as she does every week, to talk about what's going on in the halls of the General Assembly. Laura, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
The budget, I guess, or wrestling over the budget, the big sport this week, where does it stand right now? What's holding it up?
Well, what's holding it up at the moment is the dispute between the House and the Senate over a number of items. You may remember a week or two ago we had a long delay over a continuing resolution, and that was the same fight. It's just being continued now in the real budget. The problem is that there were these two temporary tax increases that were introduced in 2001. One was a half percent sales tax increase that was, you know, across the board, and the other was this extra half percent increase in the very top income tax bracket. Those two things were introduced sort of in tandem in 2001. They were both rolled over in 2003. But this year, the Senate had said, we need to cut the top bracket, the top income tax bracket, because they say that it's hurting business and hurting our ability to recruit jobs into North Carolina. The House is saying you can't cut the top and not cut for everybody. And so that's kind of been the loggerheads they found themselves at. This week, what happened is the governor weighed in and basically nixed the whole tax cut idea and said, you know, we can't afford to cut the sales tax. And so the House says, well, then we're not cutting anything. So it sounds to me at this point as though there are discussions going on today and probably over the weekend that will include a finance package and revenue tax increases, but it doesn't look like anybody's getting a tax cut this year
so
at this point.
It doesn't look like there'll be any tax cut, but as part of the budget proposal, they're including revenue programs. In other words, how to make more money. What are we going to do? Lottery is part of that, and cigarette taxes, all part of that revenue package?
And those, as I understand, are the two things that are really holding things up right now. The cigarette tax in the Senate is backing a 35-cent increase per pack, which would bring us to about 40 cents a pack, which is still about half of the national average. But the House will only go for a 25-cent increase per pack. And that's a serious stumbling block because the House leadership says we just don't have the votes to pass anything more than a quarter a pack. On the other end of things, the lottery, that's something that's been a lot more popular with the governor and in the Senate than it has been in the House. And the House barely just narrowly squeaked through that lottery vote earlier this year on a one-vote margin. And so the House leadership is saying, we don't want to put the lottery in the budget because we won't be able to pass the budget that way. So, but you still have to figure out in the state budget how you're going to spend that money if you get it. So you're going to have some language in there that's going to address the lottery, even if the lottery itself isn't in there. So those are the two big issues that are really kind of slowing things down.
Do the revenue proposals have to be part of the budget proposal, or can you actually propose and pass a spending plan without passing the revenue plan that, you know, purports to pay for it? Can they be separate bills?
Well, actually, there has been talk of splitting out the cigarette tax and the lottery to have separate votes. But in the state budget, you still have to account for what you're getting and how you're going to spend it. So you may be able to split these controversial things out, but it still all has to come back to the big bill, the budget bill, in order for the state to be able to balance its books.
Let's shift gears a little bit. I understand that youthful offenders with felony convictions might be getting some relief. Tell us about that.
Well, North Carolina, as you may know, is one of very few states in the country that actually tries 16 and 17-year-olds as adults, which means that they can have felonies. But it's also one of the only states that doesn't allow 16 and 17-year-olds to expunge their records. So what that means is if you're, say, you're convicted of a felony at 16 years old, you can be kicked out of school, you can't get financial aid, you probably can't get into college, you can't get into the military, and you can't get a job, which is a serious problem. So the move that or the bill that narrowly passed the House yesterday would allow some teenage felons to clear their records, to expunge them completely. But it couldn't be anything involving a sexual offense, an assault, of violence of any kind, or methamphetamine would be another deal killer right there. But what you'd have to do as a teenager is you'd have to do 100 hours of community service and find some way to get your GED or complete your education. And then you could apply to the court to have your record expunged if you fit all those requirements.
Fit all those. And as I understand it, there could only be one such offense. That is to say that you would be convicted only of one. If you had more than one felony conviction, you couldn't expunge your record. Is that right?
Well, pretty much. If you got more than one conviction on a single trip to the courtroom, you could get them all wiped at the same time. But if you – this only applies to first offenders. So if you've been back in court more than once on a felony, yeah, it's your felonies aren't going anywhere.
What are its chances in the Senate?
You know, as I understand, they're pretty good. I mean, but there are some strong opponents to this idea, including people who are concerned about later life. What happens when you end up with people trying to be teachers or doctors or in other sensitive professions and you don't know, you know, what it is that they've done at 16 or 17 years old? And so there is concern. But, you know, I think a lot of people are seeing this as a limited step toward helping these youngsters who make bad mistakes to get their lives back on track.
Last week, the legislature was on its way to passing a bill that would allow beer with higher alcohol contents to be purchased in the state. That bill was suddenly corked, I guess is the way to put it. What happened?
Well, they call it the pop the cap bill. North Carolina has a cap on the amount of alcohol you can have in beer at 6%. And that leaves out a lot of microbrews and specialty beers and craft beers that a lot of people in North Carolina and people who are moving into North Carolina from other places would like to be able to buy. So what they wanted to do was to lift that level to 15%, which would allow in a lot of that stuff. And so far it pretty much sailed through the House and sailed through committee and Senate. But there have been voices of opposition, not many, but fairly loud ones, who have been saying what this will also do is allow some high alcohol malt liquor brands into your local convenience stores. And these are targeted at youth and they're targeted at minority drinkers. And maybe communities don't want this, you know. And other people are saying if you're going to increase beer to 15%, you're going to have more drunk driving and more alcohol addiction among young and older drinkers. So that's what came up yesterday in the Senate. There really wasn't, nobody was anticipating that this bill would not sail through the Senate the way that it sailed through everything else. But it was pulled from its vote and it was shuffled off to committee. So who knows when that's going to come back.
Were these objections part of the debate while it was in the House?
There wasn't that much debate in the House. I mean, it showed up a little here and there in committee, but you do tend to get more floor debate in the Senate anyway because it's a smaller body and they take their time about things. So I think we just heard more about it on the floor in the Senate than we have before.
Well, now let's suppose you're a wine drinker in the state and not a beer drinker. It turns out North Carolina might be the place for you.
North Carolina is working hard on its wine industry. It's now the 12th. I didn't know this until just the other day. This is the 12th biggest wine producing state in the country. Yeah. Who knew? And so legislators are doing their best to try to help the wine industry get on its feet and get underway. And not just the kind of sweet dessert wines that you associate with state wines, but actual fine wines. And one of the bills that has gone through so far, it has to go back for concurrence, but it's pretty much passed, would allow your local grocery store to resume doing wine tastings. It used to be that they did them and then there was a flap about what the laws actually were and so they had to knock them off. But retailers are pretty happy about this. And it also allows, this is kind of cool, it allows for wine schools to sell some of the wines that they make to help pay for the cost of the school, to help raise funds. And so some of the wine programs at the smaller community colleges are pretty happy about that, too.
Wow, so the frat party's built into the room, board, and tuition. That's not bad. And wine tasting at the grocery store, but see, the problem there is you start drinking a little bit of wine, then you're going to want your malt liquor and you can't buy it.
That's right.
Start getting a little crazy. One measure the state legislature would do would be to create a commission to study global warming, a little more serious topic. What would that global warming commission do?
Well, what they're going to look at is basically, number one, is there such a thing as global warming? And yes, that is a really big question. Number two, how is it affecting the state? And there are two big issues. North Carolina, A, relies on its coasts for a lot of its tourism industry. But as you know, the Outer Banks really are not elevated that much above sea level. And there's concern that global warming could mean that North Carolina will have a lot less beach to market to tourists. Number two is that we have the Christmas tree industry, which is also really subject to any changes in climate. So because of that, the legislative leaders have said we need to figure out what global warming is likely to do to North Carolina, what are the costs and benefits associated with taking steps to curb it. But of course, the opposition says, hey, you know, we're one state. What difference does it make if North Carolina makes changes to its laws or puts restrictions on businesses when nobody around us is doing the same thing?
Well, that sounds like a pretty good criticism. Are there precedents for this? Are there other states that have such commissions and have done anything productive with the results?
There are about 17 other states that have similar commissions, but most of them are they're not in the Southeast. But the supporters of this bill, like the Environmental Defense Fund, say if North Carolina will just start it off, you know, take the first step, that states around us are watching and are likely to follow whatever North Carolina does.
House Judiciary Panel has scheduled debate next Tuesday on two topics, lobbying reform and a moratorium on the death penalty. Let's start with lobby reform. What's likely to happen there?
Ooh, well, the Senate passed a bill on that earlier this year that would do away with the state's infamous goodwill exception, which means if I'm a lobbyist and you're a legislator, I can spend any money on you I want to and not report it as long as I don't mention Bill 285 or something like that. So the bill that passed the Senate got rid of the goodwill exception, put a $100 cap on what a lobbyist can spend on a legislator per year. And it also strengthened the reporting requirements. But it was not an easy vote in the Senate. You know, there's a lot of debate over some of the specifications of it, and it could have a tough time making it through the House as well.
Let's just take a look at this. How did this get the name, the goodwill exception? Where's the goodwill here?
Well, as a lobbyist, it's in my best interest to develop your goodwill so that you're happy to see me when I walk into the office.
We're not pushing legislation here. You may happen to know what I'm interested in, but hey, let's have a drink.
Right. And yeah.
Death penalty moratorium?
The death penalty moratorium is one of those that keeps coming back and never goes anywhere, but it might this time. But the trick is there may not be a moratorium attached to it. Most of the opponents have really objected to the idea of stopping executions for everyone on death row. They say some cases are not in dispute, so why stop it for them? So we may be looking at a more selective version of it.
Laura, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Laura Leslie is the Capitol reporter at North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. Just ahead, a trip around the state with editorial page editors. Support for The State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Stay with us.